Today's shiur, Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Samech Ches. We will begin on Daf Kuf Samech Zayin Amud Beis, 5 lines from the bottom. Says the Gemara, Hu Tavra. There was a receipt which indicated that a woman's ksuba had been paid up. Tav Chosmala, there was signed on that receipt, Rav Yimri Ba'Abra, Asil Kamed Hayitasa. This woman came to Rav Yimri, and she said to him, Lav Anoy Havoy, I was not the woman who requested that you should sign this receipt. There might have been another woman who has the same name as I do, and her husband has the same name as my husband who made this request, but it was not me. Amala, so Rabbi Yimriya Baba said to her, Anon Nami Amalhu. I also said to the Edim who was signing this document, the Lav Ihi, you're not that woman that asked to sign this shtar. Lav Ihi, Vamali, and the Edim said to me that you are that woman. And this that I've been saying that you're not actually that woman, makish hu de kashala. The woman, you got older, and since you got older, kvar bagala kala, and you look different, and your voice is different. Amar Abaya, Tabaya now wants to tell us what is the halacha in this situation. Amar Abaya, afgav the rabbanan, even though the rabbanan have taught us that kivin shehigit shuvei nechayz v'magid, that once a psak is issued, you can't back off. And once Rabbi Yirmiya said that that's not that the woman, now he could say, how can he retract and say it was the woman? Says the Gemara, here there's a legitimate excuse how he made this mistake. Because says the Gemara, Tzuvim Rabbanan, Tamidei Chachamim, like Rabbi Yirmiya, Lav Urchei LeMeidek, aren't paying that much attention to who the women are. And because they're not paying that type of attention to who the women are, that's why it's a kind of mistake that you could make. So even though we learned that halacha is kivin shehigid shuv eina chayzru umagid, that's the Rishonim and understanding Gemara, that's only in a case that where they say that they said something which was false. So Edom can't come and say, well, we said something which was incorrect and now we're changing our mind. Here, which is a legitimate explanation. And moreover, as the Rishonim point out, the concern always is that ain't other Mason Matsme Russia. A person can't say that I lied, that I did something wrong. In this case, as the Gemara is very much teaching us, Rabbi Yirmiya did not do anything wrong. He just said that I don't pay that close attention to women. In that case, that's the halacha is that we don't say kivin shehigid in tzar shuv ein chayzru magid. So ask Rabbi Chanan if Tamid Chachamim have this thing that they don't pay attention. So how could we ever accept the edus of a Talmud Chacham? Shouldn't we always be concerned that the Talmud Chacham is not being accurate in his edus? Says Rabbi Chanan. Even, and this is going to be part of what we're going to be learning in our shiur, says Rabbi Chanan, that even though Talmid Chacham do make this kind of mistake, it isn't to the degree that they're completely disqualified from saying Eidus. Rather, the way to understand the Gemara, as I understand what Rabbi Chanan means to say, is that here we have a problem of kivin shigit shevein echayzu magid. Here we have a problem of enei demats merosho. So for that we could accept that lav survey derabbanan lav urch lemedik. But it doesn't mean, the Gemara doesn't mean to say that a Talmud Chacham has to be such a, become disqualified. Moreover, I saw that the Yad Ramah says that we shouldn't understand that the Gemara is coming to teach us that a person, and we're going to speak about this a little more in a moment, that in order to be able to say Eidus, you have to be such an expert that you have to really know every detail about the woman. Of course, that's not what the Gemara means to say. What the Gemara means to say is to resolve the problem of Kivin Shehigid, Shuvei Nechayzer Magid. For that, this is good enough. So ask the Sefer Matame Yaakov, why do we have to have a special limud that Kivin Shehigid, Shuvei Nechayzer Magid? The halacha is that every Eidus has to be Eidus HaTeroi LaZoma, a concept that comes up often in Shas. That if the Eidus is not an Eidus that you could be Mazim, it's not a valid Eidus. So if the Eid can always change his mind, asks the Matame Yaakov, so then of course Elnet will always have a problem of Eidus HaTeyochel Azima, because then the Eid will just change his mind. So he answers, the halacha that Eidim become Eidim Zomimim is only after they said their testimony. That when after Nigmar Hadin, after the entire was paskind. But the halacha of Kivin Shuvei Nechayzer Magid is before the entire was concluded. And therefore, the two concepts aren't connected at all. The Baal Turim says, when the Torah says, Im lo yagid v'nosa avoinoi. And it's very interesting, points out the Baal Turim, when the Torah writes the word imloi, it should have spelled lamed aleph, but it's spelled lamed vav aleph, and we in the Kri is imloi yagid. And what the Torah says, imloi, if you already said, not to be defined as loi, as you didn't say, but on the contrary, imloi yagid, if you have already testified, then v'nasa avayna, you can't say anything anymore, because kivin shigit shuvein echayzer magid. Says the Gemara, who have tavra? There was a receipt. Dav chosim alei yirimi ba'aba yirimi was signed on it. Amalei, and again, the woman came and said that I wasn't that woman. Lava nahave, amalei, and Rav Yirmi said, no, ivrat tavra, it was you that I signed for. Amra bayam, avgav the tzum rabbonah lav urche lemedik, even though. So now asks comments Abaya. We've been learning in our shir that there's a concept that the Talmud Chacham is not necessarily careful. So maybe we should accept what this woman says, but no. If the Talmud Chacham, and this is very much in line what we learned from Rebbe Chanan, he says that even though Talmud Chacham don't necessarily check, but if they say that they checked, it doesn't mean that they're completely disqualified. It means that they don't always check. And if they say that they didn't check, we will accept what they say. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't accept a Talmud Chacham when he says, I know what I'm talking about. Says the Gemara, because of all this, Amar Abai Haitzar Rebon Dozul Kudusha Isa, a Talmud Chacham was going to get married. Nidbar Amoritz Bahadei. He should take Amoritz with him. Because, says Abaya, Dumma Michel Femine, they may switch the collar on him. And since he's not that careful, he doesn't always pay attention to the woman that he's looking at. So in order to avoid any problem, make sure to take along an Amoritz with him who does pay attention, and the Amoritz who go with him and pay attention will make sure that the woman who he's supposed to marry is the woman who he's marrying. So that says the Rambam, that when a man meets a kala, when a person asal adam shekad lekadish isha b'loy shirena, a person can't marry a woman without seeing her. He has to really make sure, says the Rambam, that he knows who he's marrying. And pay, even though he normally doesn't pay attention, here, if he wants to marry this woman, he should pay attention and know that this woman is a woman that he's satisfied with marrying. The Rambam, the Ravid, disagrees with the Rambam, because the Ravid is saying that our Gemara is telling us that the Talmud Chacham should take along an Amoritz, because the Talmud Chacham alone cannot be relied that he paid proper attention who the Kala is. So, obviously, it's the opinion of the Ravid that even though, as the Gemara says, in Masechet Kedushin Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, that a chosan is supposed to look at the kalah, it doesn't mean that he has to have pay such close attention. So, and the Ravid says, our Gemara is a raya. The raya being that our Gemara is saying that he should take along the Amoritz. If the Rambam was correct, says the Ravid, that the Talmud Chacham has to pay close attention, why does he have to take along the Amoritz with him when he's going to get married? The Magen Mishnah, however, says that in the contrary, the Rambam is basing it on the Gemara. He's saying that what the way to understand the Gemara is that Abai is telling us that you're allowed to look at the kala. And I saw to make sure that this kala somebody you're satisfied with. However, even though, says the Magen Mishnah, in explaining the opinion of the Rambam, that's what the halacha wants, we're concerned that the Talmud Chacham, who's not accustomed to looking at women, will not pay the proper attention. And in order to make sure that that doesn't happen, that's why Chazal said, take along the Amoritz. So of course, the question that I saw Rav Moshe discusses in the Shalos HaTshuvos Igros Moshe, Eir Chaim Chelek Aleph Simcha Vav, is that here the Talmud Chacham is being careful not to look at women. Fantastic. So because you're not supposed to do so. So why is he putting the Amoritz into this position by having the Amoritz look at that? Says Rav Moshe that just like the Halacha says that the Talmud Chacham, particularly as the Rambam learns, is allowed to look because it's all for the sake of getting married. In a case where we are concerned that the Talmud Chacham is not going to look the way he's supposed to look, the way he's supposed to look at the kala as the halacha wants him to look. So what the halacha tells him to do is take along the Amoritz. And here, when the Amoritz is looking, he's not looking on a bad way. He's looking for the sake of being able to help that a couple should get married. That's 100% acceptable. Which opens up a question when you have Edom under the chuppah and they're saying Edis on this marriage, do they have to look at the kala in order to fulfill their job? The Mabit says that indeed we have to pick up the veil of the kala, and the Edom have to be able to look at that girl and say that we know that this is the kala. And not only is it a Mabit, there's a tshuva from Yehuda, the son of the Rosh, who says that that's what's appropriate to be done by every wedding. Davni Meluim, however, says that this is halacha in a situation where there are not many people attending the wedding. And therefore, the Edom have to be confident that they know who is the kala. But says Davni Meluim, if there's a wedding, which usually is the case with many people, says that the many women who are able to identify that this was the kala, the halacha is that the Edom don't have to pay such close attention to who the kala is. The Chesed Lavrom disagrees, and he says that the fact that there are many women who are attending the wedding and they're able to identify who the kala is, but the women are not the Edom, and since the women are not the Edom, their recognition of the kalas is not enough. There are many different opinions around this discussion, and some places were very makbid to follow the opinion of the Mabit, that the Edom should pay attention and know exactly who the kala is. Other places were satisfied that if they're not people who can identify who had the kala at the wedding, it's not the job of the Edom to have to do so. So we learned in the Mishnah, Habal Noisen Schar, when we speak about a get, the husband is the one that has to pay for the get. Ask the Gemara, my Tama, why is that the halacha? Says the Gemara, because the Pasuk says, the Kosolo Sefer Krisis, that the husband should write a Sefer Krisis, for Nosen Beyodo, and give it to her. And since the husband has this obligation, the obligation of giving the get is on the husband, so of course, he's the one that has to pay for it. Says the Gemara, V'idn d'loy avdin hachi, v'dvan azeh that we don't do so, and the woman pays for the get. Why? Shadru arbon ar isha, Chazal said that it should be the wife who pays for the get, k'eicha d'loy lashia. The husband's going to want to delay giving the get. And since the husband's going to want to delay giving the get, the only way the wife can make sure that she gets the get that she's anxious to get is for her to pay for it. And as the Yad Rama says, so therefore the halacha that the wife pays for the get is only in a case where the wife is getting divorced, but she wants to get divorced. But let's say, which we know, with the Raisa, a husband could divorce his wife even against her will. So there, the wife is not interested in getting divorced, and the husband's the one that wants to get divorced. If that's the case, then says the Yad Rama, the husband's going to have to pay to get. But we have a very fundamental issue that the Poskim discuss here. And that is if the wife is paying for the get, but as we just learned that the Pasuk says that the husband has to pay for the get, how could that be acceptable? So some suggest that Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Hefker Bezdin Hefker could say that the money that she's paying becomes like the husband's. But many Achroinim take issue with that statement, because they explain that what Hefker Bezdin Hefker could say is that money which is ostensibly mine is not mine. Chazal were mafker the money. Bezdin has the authority to say Hefker Bezdin Hefker and say money which is really mine is not mine. But here, what Hefker Bezdin Hefker is doing is so much more. What Hefker Bezdin Hefker is doing in our Gemara is taking money that really belongs to her and giving it to the husband. And how could that be acceptable? So I saw two different approaches. One approach is the approach of the Torah, that even though normally Hefker Bezdin Hefker doesn't have that authority to take it away from me and make it yours, here, because we're anxious to be able to help this woman not be an aguna, we have a much broader application of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. That's one approach that I saw. The other approach is that what the Gemara means to say is that the woman pays for the get, but after she pays for the get, she goes and gives the get to the husband, and he is koinet from her. So at the time that the get is given, the get is truly his. And since at the time the get is given, it's truly his, we have no problem that's a violation of what says in the pasuk. We learned in the Mishnah, kaisa shtar leiva, we could write a shtar chayv on behalf of the leiva, apish ei malva ima, even though the malva is not there. So as the Gemara Pshita says, and the leiva has to pay. And of course, as the Gemara Pshita, the leiva has to pay. Who is the one, asked the Gemara, that's benefiting from the loan? The leiva. And as we said in our previous shiur, whoever is the one that's benefiting is the one that has to pay, answers the Gemara. The case of our Mishnah Leitzricha is speaking about Be'iska. As we learned so many times in Masecht Baba Metzia, when we learned Hilchos Ribis, the Gemara taught us that, of course, if somebody borrows money, he's not allowed to pay interest for borrowing money. But the Gemara spoke about what we know as a heter iska, which means that half the money is used as a loan and half the money is used as an investment. We don't have the time now to go through all the intricacies of a heter iska. But what we learned in that sugya was that because it's being structured as a business venture, or partially as a business venture, that's why there is no problem of interest. But once we're structuring it, says the Gemara, as a business venture, so then the argument that this is strictly for the benefit of the leiva falls away, because it's now a business venture that the malva is going to benefit from. And as we're learning, that whoever is the one that benefits is the one that pays for the loan. If that's the case, maybe the halacha ought to be, says the Gemara, that the malva should also have to pay in such a case for the loan, for the cipher. Teaches us the Gemara that at the end of the tay, the one that's really benefiting is obviously the loiva, and therefore he is the one that has to pay for the loan. We learned further in the Mishnah, we pay for the meicher, we can write a document for the meicher, even though the seller, even though the buyer is not there. And we also learned that the buyer is the one that pays for the document. Ask the Marpshita. Of course, he ought to be the one to pay. He's the one that's benefiting. He's getting this asset. Answers the Gemara, like Tzricha. The Gemara here is referring to a situation, but Maicha Sada B'nei Rasa. The person who's selling the document is very anxious to sell this. So since he's very anxious to sell it, we would think that in that case he should have to pay. Teaches us the Mishnah that it's always considered the benefit for the buyer who gets the property, and therefore he has to pay. We learned the Mishnah, and kais for shtari yosin, and then we learned that the chosin pays for the shtari irusin. Pshita says the Gemara that he should pay because he's the one that's getting married. Lo tzricha, the filu tzurvim rabbanan, that even in a case where you have a talmid chacham, the nichle lechamul kruvei, the father-in-law is very anxious to get this young man as his son-in-law. He's a big talmid chacham. It's still the chosin who has to pay. And kaisvin kaishtar risus kablonis. And then the Mishnah says that the person who's being hired is the one that has to pay. Answers the Gemara, of course, he's getting a job, so he's the one that's benefiting. And if he's the one that's benefiting, he should have to pay. Answers the Gemara, loy tzricha, the Mishnah speaking about a case, babura, a field that isn't, that has to be left unused. It's a low quality field, or as we often discuss in Ashurim, they used to rotate crops, and therefore he's really not going to get much benefit from this field. Still, we always say the person who's getting a job is the beneficiary. Then the Mishnah said, a shtar berurim has to have the agreement of both parties. So ask the Gemara, my shtar berurim, what exactly is shtar berurim? Says the Gemara, hocha targima, l'shtarei tanosa, that everybody who's coming to a din Torah write down what their claims are. And the reason that Bezdin mandates that they should write down their claims is because it's like a deposition. We don't want that afterwards they should have to start their claims all over again. We want to know what they're saying. Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar, what a shtar berurim means, zeh bar lo echad v'zeh bar lo echad. That when, if there's a place where there's no Bezdin Kavua, or even if there is a Bezdin Kavua, but the two litigants do not want to go to that Bezdin, we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem in Masechta Sanhedrin, that the way the Bezdin is established, Zebar Le'echad, this litigant picks a Dayan, the Zebar Le'echad, and the other litigant picks a Dayan, and then they pick a Sholish. And that is committed to writing, that they shouldn't then want to retract, and therefore that is the shtar, and that's what's known as a shtar berurim. So the Yad Ramah says that the Gemara just offered two different explanations of what the shtar berurim is. He says they're not disagreeing; they both could be correct. The Taisus Yontif says no, that then they are actually arguing. Says the Gemara that we have a machloikis to have, if you have to have two shtar berurim or one. Says the Gemara Lema. So ask the Gemara, the opinion that, ask the Gemara, what is the machloikis? Why indeed should one document not be satisfactory? Why do we have to spend the money? Because again, we remember that in those days, everything was handwritten. Why was expenses be made to pay for two? So ask the Gemara, it seems that the machloikis here is, there's nothing to be gained, and can you insist that I should have to pay even though there's nothing to be gained? The Mar and the Gemara is suggesting that the way to understand the Machlokes in the Mishnah is the Tanakam holds Koifin. And therefore, if there's nothing to be gained with two documents, you can't force me to write it. Or Mar Sover and Koifin. So if I call him a Koifin, if there's nothing to be gained, you can't force me to do it. V'hocha, Hayin Tam Dev Shimon Gamliel, that we could force that two documents should be written. Domalei, because what are we saying is a shtar berurim, where I set forth all my claims. And I could claim that I want to have my claims in my document, and your claims should be written in your document, and you should not have access to my document. I don't want you should have access to my claims because the Rama Salai Ka'aria Ava. To me, if you have my claims, I don't treat you as an honest person. And what you're going to do is study my claims all day. And after studying my claims all day, you're going to now come up with ways to counter my claims. And therefore, I'm not agreeable that you should have that my document. And therefore, it's not that I'm trying to be unfair in saying I want a separate document. It makes a lot of sense what I'm saying. Says the Mishnah, Misha par mitzvah chayv, if somebody paid up partial payment of his debt. So now we have a real dilemma. When part of the debt was paid and part of it wasn't paid, what's going to happen now is, we often discuss in our shurim, when somebody owes somebody else money and there's a shtar, there's a document indicating that that money is owed. So when I pay up, when the loiva pays up, the malva has to return the shtar. Here, there was partial payment. And because there was partial payment, what are we going to do? Leave the shtar with the malva is not an option because the malva has in that shtar the entire amount that I owe, but I've already paid up somewhat. To give back the shtar to the loiva is also obviously not an option because he still owes some of the money. So we have here a real issue. What should we do? So the Mishnah says, this is what they do. Misha para mitzvah chayvei, if the loiva paid up partially, so he says, not the malva, nor the loiva should hold on to the shtar. Rather, hishlas as a shtaroi. They leave the shtar by a third party. And the loiva says, I'm a loi. And the loiva says, im loi etan l'chob mika'an v'ajoyim ploini, if I won't pay you up within a certain day, tailor shtaroi, give back the malva the shtar. And now says the Mishnah, higi azman, and that day came. And the loiva said, if I'm not paid up by that day, then go back to the, give the shtar back to the malva. Rabbi Yosef Meitain, he could give the shtar back to the malva, and the malva would collect the entire amount due. Yehuda says, lo yitain, you're not allowed to do so. And the Gemara is going to explain the machlokes in a moment. But before we go further, according to Rabbi Yosi, you're going to give back the shalish is going to give back the shtar to the malva. And the malva, ostensibly, is going to collect the entire amount. How could the malva collect the entire amount? Wouldn't collecting the entire amount represent ribis? So because of this question, the Rashbah says that we are not to understand that what Rabbi Yossi means to say, that give back the malva the shtar, and the malva will be allowed to collect the entire money. We can never make that type of a, we can never understand that Mishnah, because the Mishnah that way, because that would represent that the loiva is paying more than he got. And that certainly represents an issaribus that nobody could suggest is permissible. That's, and the Rashbah says, that's not what Rabbi Yossi means to say. But it's difficult to understand it that way, because if that's the case, the Rabbi Yossi is saying you're also only paying as much as you owe. So what is the machloikus? And what is the practical element of their machloikus? And because there are many Rishonim suggest that this is not considered a situation of ribis. Because what is the definition of ribis? The definition of ribis is agenotar. That interest means that I'm paying for having the ability to hold on to your money. So say to Rishonim, here, when this loiva is going to end up paying more, he's not paying because he, for the right, for the benefit of being able to have held on to your money. That's not what he's paying for. What he's paying for is that he took upon himself that he's going to pay by a certain time, and he's not paying by that time. So it's really more as a knas, as a fine, as a penalty. And a penalty is not what ribis means. Ribis means paying for me holding on to your money. And therefore, we don't have a problem of, this is not considered a situation of ribis. But we do have a machloikus in the Mishnah. So ask the Gemara, Michael Mifkli, what is the basis of the machloikus? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yosi Sover, Asmach Tekanya. Rabbi Yehuda Sover, Asmachta loikanya, which means that this person, when he said that if I don't pay by a certain date, give back the shtar to the malva, what was he really meaning? What he really meant to say was that I am confident that I'm going to pay by that date. And since he didn't, and that's the only basis for why he said what he said. And therefore, we don't, if something happened, obviously, beyond his control, that prevented him from being able to pay on the date that he wanted to pay, so therefore we can't have any claim against him. So asks Reb Shimon Shkop in a Sefer Shari Yosher. So if we're going to take this approach that Asmachta Loikanya, that Reb Yossi, Reb Yehuda holds Asmachta Loikanya, and he never meant this, so we're going to throw out this way the entire concept of Tanoim. Whenever somebody makes a stipulation, obviously it was his intention that a stipulation should be followed. And if he wouldn't have thought that he could make it, he would have never made that stipulation. So asks Rabbi Shimon, why is a smachta leikanya? So Rabbi Shimon tells us a very fundamental vort. Rabbi Shimon says that we are not to understand, says Rabbi Shimon, that a tanai is halachically acceptable without any question. That's not the way the halacha is supposed to be looked at. The tanai is a chiddush in the Torah. The Torah teaches us, as we often learn in our shiurim, because of the episode of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvain, that a tanai works. But when does a tanai work? When it has the characteristics of what is a tanai. But when it's not, when it's not that way, when it's not a tanai, so just to say if a tanai works and a smachta works, that's not an acceptable approach. And a tanai, the Torah tells us a chiddush, is effective, and a smachta is not effective. So of course the Rishonim all try to give the understanding, try to understand what is the difference between a tanai and a smachta. So he says, a tanai is something that is not in my, the Ramban's approach, is a tanai is something which is not in my control. That's a tanai. Something that's in my control is an asmachta. Others suggest the difference between, the Rajba explains, the difference between a tanai and a asmachta, and our Gemara, our Mishnah is the perfect example of that, says the Rajba, is a tanai is when I make a stipulation. People often make stipulations connected to what they want to be done. But a smachta is when it's done as a knas. Our Gemara, our Mishnah is the perfect example. The person said that I'm accepting upon myself the penalty that if I don't pay within, by the time that I said I'm going to pay, then the malva should get back the shtar. That's not a stipulation. That's a knas. And when it's a knas, when it's a knas, that's called an asmachta. The person would have never, to understand what he means to say, the person would have never taken upon himself a knas that if he didn't think that he's going, if he thought that he's going to have to pay it. The Rajba also says that when a tanai, asmachta is done under duress. Why did this Loiva say what he said? Because he was in the situation together with the malva. But when it's not under duress, a tanai, when somebody's doing a business deal and they want to attach stipulations, that's called a tanai. The Rosh says that the difference, and this is a fundamental understanding, is that the difference between a tanai and a smachta is where, and the, because it's much more fundamental. Why is this not considered Dvarim Shebelev? The person said what he said. Says the Rosh that the definition of a tanai, definition of an asmachta, is where a person obviously did it under duress. When something is done under duress, it's called an asmachta. However, if somebody's entering into some whatever type of transaction, and there are stipulations attached to that transaction, that's not called a tanai. That's called a Tanai, not an Asmachta. And that's something that people, of course, have every right to take upon themselves that they want to structure a deal in any way that they want to structure the deal. However, there's another approach. There are those that suggest that there really isn't a fundamental difference between a Tanai and an Asmachta. If that's the case, why is a Tanai effective? Not only is the question, why is a Tanai effective, we find in the Torah Kedoshah that a Tanai is effective. Because that's what happened in the episode of Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven. And there's some Rishonim that want to suggest that indeed neither should be effective. The only reason it was effective by Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven is because something that's done, and even in a smachta, that's done in front of a Bezdin Choshev, doesn't have the limitations of an asmachta. There is a machlokes rishonim that when we say that the halacha of asmachta changes in front of a bezdin choshev, what is a bezdin choshev? Is a bezdin choshev only a bezdin that has smicha, which means that there's an unbroken chain of authorization going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, which of course doesn't exist bezman hazeh? Or is the definition of Bezdin Choshev any legitimate Bezdin that has the authority to do Dinei Torah? And if we're going to say that, so it'll turn out that you can't just always make a Tanai. In order, if you want that your Tanai should be effective, you have to have it done in front of a Bezdin Choshev. Says the Gemara, what is the halacha? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravu, Amar Rav. Halacha, Rav Yossi, the halacha is like Rav Yossi that a smachta kanya. Says the Gemara, Kosla kamei de Rav Ami. When this question was brought to Rav Ami, Omalu v'chim ha'akash Rav Yochanan amdenu pam rishoyna v'shniya. After Rav Yochanan has taught us more than once that the halacha is Rav Yossi, that a smachta is kanya, anochim ha'asa, says the Gemara, what should I do once that was established, the halacha? However, says the Gemara, then halacha Reb Yosi. The halacha is not like Reb Yosi. The halacha is that a smachta loikanya. But as we said, even though a smachta loikanya, a tanai is kaina. It's also interesting to point out that the Mordechai, quoting Rabbeinu Nisanel, says that even though our Gemara is teaching us that a smachta loikanya, by Hegdish and Stoka, they are a kaina. Because the Mordechai explains that midaraisa, actually, he says, an asmachta kanya. When we're learning in our Gemara that the halacha is that asmachta loikanya, that's only midrabbanan. And the Rabbanan limited an asmachta, but they did not limit it by hegdish in tzedaka. However, even though the Rishonim are saying that by hegdish in tzedaka, we say asmachta kanya, says the Bach, that if it's obvious that the person who said what he said only meant it as an exaggeration. No, somebody said that if I won't do what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to give an exorbitant amount of money to tzedakah. There, says the Bach, even though we're speaking about tzedakah, the halacha is that ashmacht eloikanya, and it's actually the opinion of a Rajba, of the Rajba as well. The Ramban says a different, and this is a much more fundamental distinction to what we've been speaking about, because we've been asking the question, if the halacha is a smachta leikanya, and we're trying to identify what is the difference between an asmachta and a tanai, and then the question, of course, is that throughout Shas, we find tanoim. So the place that we find tanoim very often in Shas is by Gittin and Kedushin. And they are Rishonim that suggest that the discussion that we're having here, Asmachta, Tanai, etc., says the Ramban, is only by Dinei Mamonos. However, when we speak about Gittin of a Kedushin, everybody will agree that Asmachta Kanya, and there's therefore no difference between a Tanai and an Asmachta, and they're both effective. Says the Mishnah, Mi Shenim Chakshtar Choyvoy. If somebody has a shtar, somebody has somebody else a loan, somebody owes somebody else money, and the document started getting erased and it can't be read. And Rashbam says that the case of our Gemara, and so the Yad Ramah says this, is only in a situation that the person, this happened by accident, beyond control. If somebody deliberately erased or tampered with the shtar, that's not what we're speaking about. And the Bach says that what's going to be the halacha, that somebody wasn't careful with his shtar, and he left the shtar in an open place or whatever, and then the shtar got erased. There, at the end, it was not something that he did. But if he wouldn't have left the shtar in such a place, this would have never happened. What would be the halacha? The Bach says that once you weren't careful at the beginning, even though at the end what happened was beyond your control, that's not the case of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is speaking specifically about a case that it was something that was beyond your control. What is the case of Shemik Nimchik Shtar Chayvoy? So Rashbam says that the Mishnah could be speaking about a case even where it was completely erased. If we could find, as we're going to learn, Edom, who could tell us what it says, we could rely on that. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that, the Rambam says, you have to be able to still be able to see the original writing somewhat. If it's completely erased, the system that we're going to learn now will not work. So the halacha is, Ma'amidol of Edom, we bring Edom who saw the shtar, who saw what it's written in the shtar before it was erased, Ubalifnei Bezdin, and these Edom come to Bezdin, Voisin Lakiyim, and they certify, they verify what it says in the shtar, that it says, Ish Pliny, and this is what the Bezdin writes, Ish Pliny Ben Pliny, this individual, this Malva, Nimchuk Shtara, his document was erased, Beyoin Pliny, and whatever date, or plenty, plenty Edom, and these are the Edom that are testifying that happened. So I saw the Rishonim say that when we're bringing Edom to be able to say this, the Edom have to be able to be very, very clear in what they saw in the shtar. If the Edom cannot be confident that they know every detail of the shtar, the halacha is that they can't rely on the shtar. Obviously, the big question that comes up when we speak about this new shtar, what is going to be the date of the shtar? What are we going to have it from the original date? That's the opinion of the Rashbam and Tosfos. Other Rishonim Rabbeinu Yonah say, no, if we're writing a new shtar, we have to write today's date. We can't write the original date. Moreover, the question is, which Edom are going to be mentioned in the shtar? Will we take the original Edom, because they were there at the original time, or do we take the Edom who now are the ones that we are relying on, that are saying that this is what the shtar said? And I saw a third opinion in the Rishonim that they say maybe we should write both pairs of Edom. There's a sefer called Sefer Hashtaros. And he asks a question that somebody who has a shtar, the halacha is, somebody has a shtar and he's concerned that something is going to happen to his shtar. So can Bezdin make a copy of the shtar? And he says that the halacha is that if somebody has a reason to be concerned that something is going to happen to shtar, not only is the case of our Mishnah, where indeed something happened to the shtar, and our Mishnah tells us what we could do, but he says whenever we have reason to be concerned that something like this is going to happen, the halacha is that Bezdin can make two copies of a shtar and we'll see how we prevent that shouldn't be abused. Moreover, says the Torah, we're learning that we should make a kiyum on the shtar. Says the Torah, when we make a kiyum on the shtar, it has to say in that kiyum that what is the reason we did what we're doing. Begins the Gemara Rabbanan, Ezu kiyuma. So exactly how is this kiyum done? As we just said, the Bezdin writes, but Maisa Tlos Avina, we sat in session, plenty, plenty, anu plenty, plenty, Vaitse plenty ben plenty shtar mokkel tfenenu, the Malva presented us with this array shtar, beyond plenty, 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 edif. Vim kosaba, and if the kiyum has, hezuknakna ledosin shal edim, we checked this edis, and we find that the Edom who are saying what it says in the original Shtar, what they're saying is corroborated, Goiva. And no further rights are required. Vimlav, if it doesn't say in the Nusach of the Kima Shtar all of this, then Tzarech Lavi Raya, the Shtar itself cannot be relied on. Says the Gemara, Nikra, if a document was deliberately ripped, puzzle. Because the fact that we see that the document was deliberately ripped, that's a proof that there's something wrong with the shtar. However, Neskara, if we see that there was an accident that caused the shtar to be ripped, then it's kosher. Nimchak or Nishtashtish, if it was partially erased, or Im Rishuma Nikar, kosher. So ask the Gemara, how can we tell if it was deliberately ripped or it was just an accident? Hechidami nikra, hechidami niskara. Am Rabbi the nikra crash of Bezdin. When Bezdin rips up a shtar, the way is to tell that Bezdin ripped it up. Niskara is crash enishal Bezdin when it's obvious that it wasn't done by Bezdin. So ask the Gemara, how can we tell that if it's a crash of Bezdin? Hechidami crash of Bezdin. Am Rabbi Yehuda, makam edim. We have the place where the Edom is signed. Makam Azman, we have the date. Makam Atayrif, where we have the unique attributes of the shtar. Any of that is ripped, if those parts of the shtar are the parts that are ripped, it's a proof that it was deliberately ripped. However, Abai Amar, Abai says that whenever Bezdin has to rip up a shtar, they rip it up shesiveri, vertically and horizontally. So we see that it was ripped up that way, it's a proof that it was done deliberately. Says the Marhane Ravidasal Pumbadisa. There were Yishmaelim that came to the city of Pumbadisa, Davakansi Arasadinchi, and they would take away people's property. Asa Marseille Kamid Abaya. And the owner of those properties would come to Abaya that their properties were stolen. Bamale, and they said to Abaya, Lechsim Ashtarin, you should look at our documents, proving our deeds to prove that these are our properties. The Lichtamar, and we know that these people are going to take away these documents from us. So write us another set of documents that we should have that to prove ultimately that this is our property. Lichtalamar Shtar Chinalei, the mitzvah is chad. If they'll take these documents away, we will still have Nakin Chabiyodim, we'll still have another set in our possession. Amlu, Maya Vidilchu, what should I do for you, Domer of Safra? We never write two deeds on the same property, for we need to be concerned that if somebody's going to lose the deed, that could be abused, the matarif or the tarif. Says the Gemara, have a katar diluhi. These people were very upset with what Abaye told them. They were constantly bothering him. Amalei l'safrei. So Abaye told his soifrim, zilk sovluhu, write for them another set. But what he told them to do was write it on a piece of paper and then erase it. And we learned earlier on Daf Kuf Samach Dalid that if you have a document that the text is on a piece of paper that was erased, the Edov are signed on a part that is not erased, puzzle, Amalu Rav Achbam Yoni Abaya, Dilma Rishumin Nikov. Maybe we won't erase it well. And well, we need to be concerned. Maybe it won't be erased well. And after it's erased, we'll be able to see the body of the shtar. V'tanya, and we just learned in the Braisa, why was he so concerned? Because we just learned in the Braisa, Nimchak on Natashtish im Rishum Nikar, if you could still see the original writing, it's kosher. Amalei, so Abaye said, Kiyam min shtar me'alya, that I write, that I mean that you should write first a good shtar. And therefore, there's a concern that if you won't erase it well, we'll see what was there originally, and therefore we may end up relying on it. I said that the first shtar you should write would just be alf-based kamina. Just write letters that don't have any meaning. So even if they will still be noticeable, they don't really have any halachic significance. So here we learned that Abaye, because he was being bothered, had no choice, and he gave this advice how to get the people off his back. The Pesukim discuss a situation where somebody is being pressured to give tzedakah, and he really doesn't want to give tzedakah, the tzedakah that he's being pressured to, but the people keep on bothering him. So the question that the Pesukim discuss is, can this person write a shtar, can a person write a check that doesn't have any coverage in the bank? And these people think that, okay, we bothered you and we got what we wanted, and they'll go to the bank and they'll realize there's nothing to cover it. So there is no question, the Chishuki Chemed discusses the Shaila, and he says there is no question that what these Gaboy Tzedakah are doing is wrong. And he quotes the Pasuk, and he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take retribution from people who pressure other people. And he says included in that is people who pressure people to give tzedakah when they're not able to give the tzedakah. And he said when he discussed, the Chishuki Chemed says when he discussed this question with Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Chaim Kanievsky immediately said that Al Gemara, what Abaye did, is the proof that you could do so. And he says, even though, as we learned earlier in our shiur, tzedakah has sometimes different rules than other shtaris, but if a person is pressured and he's doing something to be able to get that pressure off him, Abaye taught us that if there is no other option, the halacha allows that to be done.